Welcome to the Pocket Coven podcast, where magic meets mental health. I'm Amber Lenore, a witch and licensed psychotherapist.
I'm Callie Little, a sex educator and emotional support witch, and we're
the coven in your pocket. Welcome to the Pocket Coven podcast, where we have the absolute audacity to be recording during not only eclipse season, but Mercury retrograde. It is off the chain, you guys. The vibes are strong, and we are here to explore the archetype of the teen witch, the maiden aspect of the maiden, mother, and crone, and we have a wonderful guest who we're very excited for you to meet. And at the end of this episode, please stay tuned for a very special interview with real live teen witches, my daughter, Olivia, and her best friend, Molly. They have some very sweet things to say about being young witches. Before we get going, Callie, can we get an intro for our wonderful guest?
Kate Williams is the author of the young adult novels, The Babysitter's Coven, For Better or Cursed, and Spells Like Teen Spirit. She loves to write about witches, teenagers, girls behaving badly, palm trees, and all kinds of magic. So, Kate, we can't wait to hear about your witchcraft.
Yes, and I would love to start with my very favorite question, which is, are you a witch? And if so, what does that look like in your life, Kate?
Yes, I am a witch. It's very funny because I have noticed a lot of similarities between my magical practices and my writing. You know, for a long time, I wrote, but I felt very weird about calling myself a writer. And when I, you know, for the first several books that I worked on, I didn't even call them books. I would just call them my writing project because books seemed like very grandiose and like, who does she think she is? And that kind of thing. And then witch was very similar. You know, it's like, I have always been into magic. You know, the deck of tarot cards that I have, I don't even remember where they came from. I know I've had them since college. Feel like I probably bought them in high school someplace, you know, somewhere along the way. But again, I would never like use the term witch. I was always just like, oh, I'm into magic. Because again, I think it's that kind of thing that, I don't know, it's like imposter syndrome where you feel like it's too audacious to apply these big words to yourself. But yes, I am a witch. And, you know, this past year, like, I started really like kind of digging into magic, and like, I took a class, and like, I was sitting in this class and I realized that I pretty much already knew everything that was like being taught in this class. And it was just kind of like one of those holy shit moments where I was like, oh, I do know a lot about this. And I think, again, like the comparisons between writing and magic, it's like we live in such a social media age where it's almost like if you don't talk about something on social media all the time, then how could you possibly identify as that? And, you know, it's like my magical practices have always been very personal to me. And it's like, you know, I didn't want to exploit that to, you know, for like the kinds of gains that you are able to get from social media. So like, I always kind of doubted, well, it's like, that's not really my identity that I put forth. And that's not what people see about me immediately. But, you know, I think over the past year, like, you know, I spoke earlier about moving, like I've had a lot of very big life transitions. And I think I have just become a lot more comfortable with both calling myself a writer and a witch, because those are two of the defining practices of my life. You know, it's like, that is like, I'm also like a mother and, you know, I'm married, but like writing and witchcraft are like the two things that keep the wheels from falling off, you know, that keep me like being a sane person and being able to like live in this absolutely bonkers world that we live in. You know, it's like, I think writing and magic are the two ways that like I make sense of everything that's going on. So I'm very grateful to have both of those in my life.
So it sounds like witchcraft and writing are the major anchors for your mental health in your life. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the imagery of keeping the wheels on. Yeah. So thank you for that. And also what I'm thinking about is just the way that teenagers, because they're in the process of individuation, they don't have so much trouble claiming identity. You know what I mean? It's like, they just take it. They're in that process. That's what they're already doing developmentally. That's their job. And so they're able to wear all these different hats. I'm this, I am that. And that's a wonderful thing about them. And adults, it's just not that easy for us. We have way more doubt when it comes to claiming a new identity.
No, I think about that all the time. You know, I think about how passionate I was as a teenager in like claiming my identity and really like arguing my points. And yeah, it's just, I think it's very sad that, you know, the world kind of beats a lot of that out of us. I don't know. Have you guys ever seen the movie Heavy Metal Parking Lot?
No. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. I always bring this up because I watched I think it was the 25th anniversary of this movie. So the whole premise of it is it's like early 1980s, somewhere on the East Coast, I think in Maryland. And the filmmakers are going around the parking lot of a Judas Priest concert and interviewing the fans. And there's this one guy who's like wearing a head to toe spandex, like zebra print suit. And he's just like yelling into the camera about how punk is dead and it's all about metal. And like, he's just, you know, like on fire. And then so 25 years later, the filmmakers go back and they find him, you know, and he's just like a dad in cargo shorts, like living in suburbia. And, you know, I think that that happens to so many people where it's like, you know, when we're in our late teens and early 20s, we're like, just like, you know, in love with the world. And we believe that the music we like is the best music and the art that we like is the best art. And it's all about like being creative and like finding your passion. And then at a certain point you're like, oh, well, all of those things, like it's time for me to grow up. And so, you know, I think for me, like with both magic and writing, you know, it's been kind of my way of like working against those ideas of like trying to hold on to these things that were really important to me when I was 19 and remembering and like reminding myself that I don't have to grow up and out of those, that those were very valid ideas at that point in time. And they remain very valid ideas. And I think that we do that so much with young people as we write off what they think and what they feel because we're like, oh, they don't have the experience. But they totally do, you know? And so I think, yeah, just kind of learning to, I guess, kind of not work in those ideas of what you have to be as an adult is something that's very important to me.
Yeah, same. I mean, I'm not interested in being a grown-up anymore. That's for damn sure. You know, all the years I was trying to be a grown-up, I was fairly miserable. And I observe grown-ups to be miserable often. When I am able to play with adults, it really reminds me that play is not a childish thing. Play is a human need. All human beings have a need, a very appropriate, even body-based need to play, to express themselves, to be creative. The state of play and playfulness is, again, like it's not a child concern, it's a human concern. We all need that.
I think that witchcraft in general, because there is such a strong appreciation for the maiden, mother, and crone aspects in general, I feel like witchcraft is much more respectful of the teen witch archetype, of the teenager archetype, because we really hold experience as this sort of holy awareness. And we remember what it's like to be those teenagers and to be treated as if we were less than simply because we were younger than so many people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kate, I'm really curious, how did you come to this work? How did you find yourself speaking for the teen witch, giving her a voice, giving her a story?
Well, it's very funny because, you know, if you read The Babysitter's Coven, it's not really based in like witchcraft as it exists. And, you know, it's a very kind of like made up system, and it's very lighthearted and it's very funny. And it's kind of like my homage, like my pop cultural homage to like the idea of the teenage witch and some of these different tropes, that we have seen, like The Chosen One and The Babysitter. And, you know, it's just like a mashup of all of these different things. But it's very funny because for a long time, The Babysitter's Coven was my joke book because I just couldn't believe that it hadn't been done before because it seemed so obvious to me, but it also seemed so silly. And, you know, YA deals with a lot of very like serious topics, and there's not actually a lot of like humorous YA out there. So for a long time, I always knew I wanted to write YA, but I was like trying to do these different stories that were kind of a lot darker and a lot more serious. It's a whole long story, but like, I remember my husband, he was my boyfriend then, but we had gone to Mexico City for Dia de los Muertos, and we had met up with a friend of a friend, who lived in Mexico City, and he had taken us out on these canals, like on like the night of Dia de los Muertos. And so it's like, you know, it's pitch black and we're like, you know, on this like boat ride through these canals. And he was a filmmaker, and he and I started talking about like, you know, writing and ideas. And he was like, sometimes you have to let one idea go. And he was like, you know, it's a good idea when it won't let you let it go. And like, I was like, oh, that's The Babysitter's Coven. Like, and so I literally came home from that trip and scrapped what I had been working on and started working on this book. And it, from the beginning, it just felt like so much more me, you know? And I felt like when I sat down to write it, like I was having fun. And I think, you know, magic is such an alluring concept, and I wanted to kind of take like a playful approach to it because, you know, I think that, you know, it's so romanticized in fiction. But I was like, but for most of us, if we got all these magical powers, like we wouldn't know what to do with them. You know, we'd make a mess of it like we make a mess of everything else. And so it's like, I wanted something that was kind of like, almost like a realistic approach to magic powers and like, you know, just make it a lot more like lighthearted and funny. You know, it's like, it became very clear to me, like as soon as I wrote it, as soon as I started writing it, I was like, oh, this is a comedy, you know, because it's like the title, like The Babysitter's Coven, like, you know, I tell people that and they start laughing immediately, like before they know anything about the book. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of like bring all of that stuff in there. And then I've always just loved teenage witches. Like my favorite books ever were the Francesca Leah Block books, Dangerous Angels. I don't know if either of you are familiar with them. Yeah. So it's like, I have a bat tattoo in, you know, honor of Witch Baby. And like those books just like so shaped the way that I saw the world. Because, you know, I read them, I think, when I was like 13 or 14 for the first time. And up until that, I had been reading like Babysitter's Club, Sweet Valley High, these kind of very like straight and narrow books where it's like the goal was being popular or like the problems were these things that like wrapped up neatly by the end of the book. And like Francesca Leah Block's books, not only were they like infused with magic, but they were characters that were like complex and like dealing with these problems that were just kind of pervasive and like weren't easily cleaned up. And I don't know. That was, I think, probably what really started me being interested in the teenage witches. And then The Craft came out on my 16th birthday, you know, and like, and I was a huge Buffy fan. And so it was like, just kind of all of these, you know, things that had these like magical teenage girls in them just really spoke to me. And I just loved them.
That's so fantastic. I love the part of your story where you had an idea and that idea would not let go of you. It was not letting you go. It just really wanted to be with you. And I've been very interested in that idea, the kind of reframing of our relationship with magic. We're so concentrated on doing magic. I am the thing that is accessing magic. Well, what about what magic wants with you? What if magic has business with you? You know what I mean? Like,
That's such an interesting point. And, you know, I have thought about that a lot, like over the past year, and that you have to make space in our life. You have to make space in your life for things to come to you. And when your life is so packed that you are just like, you know, always like running from one thing to another, like you're not leaving space for these things to come. And, you know, I try like now, like a lot of times, like I just lay on the floor and like, I'm not meditating, I'm not napping, I'm not exercising. Like I'm literally just like laying on the floor because like, I want that like space to like be quiet and to start to see like what is there that I'm not noticing. Because I think like Amber, to your point about like what magic can we access? It's like when you're so focused on one thing, then you're not seeing the rest of it that is there for you.
Right. Like it's trying to have a relationship with you. If we're not making space for the relationality of magic, then aren't we just kind of having almost like a capitalistic perspective? I'm using this. I'm using this.
Oh, wow.
Totally. And like I have gone through periods before where I've looked back and I realized that I was approaching my magical practice as a to-do list. Where I'd be like, okay, well, you have to do this ritual and you need to make sure you light the candle. You need to put the incense on and you have to like, you know, clear the space and you have to meditate and then you have to do the tarot cards. And like, now I'm just like, sometimes I'm like, you know what? I just want to go to bed.
Yeah. I have mentioned it before on the show, but I continue to have this very self-critical view of my magical practice that I have to just keep realigning. I'm very like, I'm really invested in my altar. That's one of my big spaces that I just feel a lot of magical connectivity. And I also ebb and flow in and out of that and in and out of regular tarot practice. And lately, you know, I've been working on so many writing projects that are about magic and that are about the things I'm passionate about and using my skills. And I've been making a lot of art. And the other day I was like, oh, I feel so bad. I haven't done any witchcraft lately. And then I was like, wait, no, I have been. It's just been non-tool related. It hasn't been that I've been meditating with crystals. I've been meditating on my experience as a human being and writing down my experiences to share with others. And that is magic. And that is magic influencing me, you know, but it is also me taking appropriate advantage of the way that I feel. I love what you said about just kind of letting it come to you. Also, I would argue that just laying on your floor and allowing is meditation. Yeah.
So, Kate, this talk of laying on the floor and meditation, it's all reminding me of the different ways in which magical practices can be beneficial for mental health. So I'd like to bridge us over into that discussion. How do you think witchcraft and mental health inform each other? Do you think there's an intersection between mental health and magic?
I mean, I think it's huge. You know, I mean, like I said, for me, magic helps to keep the wheels on. And, you know, a huge part of our transition last year was that I had a miscarriage right at the beginning of the pandemic. And then, a lot of people don't really know what a miscarriage entails. Like, I definitely did not. You know, I thought it was like, oh, a couple days. But I was like bleeding for a month. And during that time, San Francisco went into total lockdown. And then we found out that my husband had to have emergency heart surgery. And this was, you know, the very first couple of weeks of the pandemic where it's like he was the only person in the hospital. The doctor was like meeting him on the corner at Walgreens because they couldn't meet. And, you know, it was like crazy. And, you know, I definitely felt like, you know, we got through that. And about a month later, like I definitely felt myself kind of, you know, starting to get really depressed. And, you know, I had really bad postpartum depression after I had my son. So it's like, I now know the signs. And for me, what Magic was a lifesaver at that point, because it was a reminder to me that this life wasn't all about me, and that it all wasn't all about like the things that I did, you know. And, you know, it just kind of like let me open up and have this more expansive view of like myself as a part of everything and all of these experiences, you know, being ultimately, you know, teaching experiences and things that I needed to go through to grow and become the person that I was meant to be. And, you know, I also had another experience a couple years ago where a really good friend of mine got very sick with cancer very suddenly and passed away 6 weeks later. And, you know, our generation, I don't know, you know, I'm 41. I grew up in the Midwest. So a lot of us grew up, and this is a friend from the Midwest. A lot of us like grew up kind of in very, my family didn't go to church, but we were around a lot of evangelicals. So it's like, I had this very like black and white view of like religion and spirituality, which is like, it's bad. You know, I don't want anything to do with it. And then, you know, over the years through Magic and everything, like I have really kind of developed my own system of beliefs. And what I watched when my friend was passing away was that like my other friends who didn't have this just couldn't comprehend what was happening. And it's like, they so needed something that would bring them like an understanding of death and life and all of these things that are so out of our control. And, you know, I'm just like so grateful that I have these like kind of beliefs and these practices that, you know, let me reach out and touch things that are so much greater than my own individual life. Because I think that that's really, really important.
That's so beautiful. And I really agree. Thank you for answering that question. It's a big question. I am constantly impressed by how when we open that door, a lot comes through. You know, the topic of mental health is incredibly, incredibly personal. And there were a couple of points you made that I'd love to just discuss more, just rip off of or identify. And the big one is just how I noticed that having a system of belief was an anchor for you during a period of trauma. And we can go through trauma and not be traumatized.
Yeah.
When we have a supportive structure around us, when we go through trauma, we don't necessarily have to live with the lasting effects, the trauma responses, right? And when we don't have a system of belief or we have insufficient support, that's when we become traumatized. We don't have the coping we need to get through the hard thing. So I was really noticing that. And then kind of extrapolating that, I'm noticing that witchcraft gives us this healthy like concept of self, right? I'm powerful. So a hard thing happens and we have a core belief about ourselves as a witch of being powerful. Thus, I can manage the hard things when they come up. If we don't have a healthy concept of self, then there's nothing to lean on. If our story about ourselves is that we can't handle things, then a hard thing happens and we don't feel like we have that capacity.
And Amber, to touch a little bit on that too, I think, you know, it's like we live in, you know, our mainstream culture is so about the individual. So we tend to look at everything as like, this is happening to me. And, you know, especially when you are talking about like fertility things like miscarriage and infertility, it's like we have a really, women who are going through things like that have a very strong tendency to think, I am being punished. This is because I smoked when I was in my 20s, or this is because like I had an abortion, or like we just have a tendency to blame ourselves for everything. And it's like when you can take a step back from that and be like, I'm part of this huge web and I'm going through this, not because of something that I did that I'm now being punished for, but because there is ultimately a lesson here for me to learn. That's a very, very big thing. And that, yeah, it's very comforting. And I think, you know, especially with magic, you work with so many, you know, and it's like, I work with deities, I work with angels, like, you know, you really do not feel alone, you know? And I think that that is huge.
Yes. And I could yes and that forever. And also I want to make space for Callie. I mean, as we're riffing on this, what's coming up for you, love?
I'm just, you know, thinking about the strength of identifying with something greater than yourself. And I think that if we're looking at this from the lens of the teen witch, you know, we so often just discredit kids, period. A teenager identifying with something huge and powerful and meaningful, I think that it's very scary to people, someone, especially someone feminine, really identifying with power. And whether or not they're, you know, being necessarily wise, which is like a 16-year-old is going to be a dumbass sometimes, the same way I, a 31-year-old, will be a dumbass sometimes. But I think that there are so many reasons that we end up carrying those bits of shame that you referenced earlier, like calling myself a witch feels so, I feel like you said ostentatious or something like that. So it just feels like a weird, itchy sweater, you know, because you don't want people to look at you and think that you're being a fool when really what you're saying is I'm aware that I'm a student of like the universe. I am the fool card all the time. I don't know. I just am enjoying, you know, listening to you two really bounce off of each other and hearing your reflections of your recent life experiences. It sounds like you've had a hell of a year and that your identity that you've been crafting your whole life has given you so much comfort, which, I mean, I think that making meaning and finding a way to be joyful or at least comfortable in this life is most of the work of being a human.
Absolutely. So
I just, I just really admire that. And also, like Amber, want to say thank you for sharing all of those stories with us.
Well, thank you for giving me a space to share it. And to your point about teenage girls in power, like, you know, I think that and I always try to think about how to say this because it's not really our society or our culture, because this is kind of the idea across many different societies and cultures, but we have two approaches to teenage girls, which is like, we either want to protect them or exploit them. And it's two sides of the same coin, because both those ideas are rooted in the belief that we can't trust these girls to make decisions for themselves. And if you look at how teenage witches have been portrayed in pop culture, like The Craft is a great example. It's like, oh, they have power now. That's terrifying. And, you know, I think that that is why teenagers are so drawn to witchcraft, is because it's a way of trying to claim power in a world that doesn't want to give you any of it, you know? So yeah, I think that that's a huge thing for teenagers and witchcraft, is just using it as a tool to define themselves as a person.
Right. And in the craft, we see this great example of how power can belong to women, but only the strongest women or the craziest mm-hmm. yeah. women. So it's an either or, you know, you're not allowed to be a regular standard issue human who maybe has flaws. You have to be either a superhuman or a supervillain. Mm-hmm. Nah.
No, thank you. You know, something you said, Callie, earlier that I really liked is you brought up the triple goddess. And as you were saying that, it occurred to me, so many things occur when we're recording together, in communion together. It occurred to me that the wisdom of the crone, very explored, very explored. The wisdom of the mother archetype, very explored. Like, what is the wisdom of the maiden aspect of the teenager? What do you think that archetype has to teach us?
Oh my God, that's such a good question. I mean, I think enthusiasm, you know, and this just belief in what is possible. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, I think that's something that we're conditioned to let go of. Whereas like if you talk to a teenager, they're like, well, I want to travel the world. You know, I want to write books, make music. I want to direct my own movie. You know, I want to have 7 kids and I don't need a husband. You know, it's like, I'm going to adopt them all. And like, and then, you know, I think that is the wisdom, is like this just embrace of possibility without immediately discounting it and immediately telling yourself that, oh, that's not going to work. You know, that's not practical. So yeah, I think that, I don't know. I went to my cousin's high school graduation party yesterday and just watching the teenagers, like, it's an age group that I love because it's so pure.
It really is. They believe with you. They really do.
Recently in, I think in 2 episodes and predominantly in our Sacred Play episode, we've talked about how, you know, often in mental health work and even in magical work, we talk about the inner child, and Amber and I have both been working a lot with the inner adolescent. And so much of it for me is about being in my creative self, and exactly like what you're talking about, Kate. I think of when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, I want to paint, so I'm going to paint. It wasn't, I want to paint and what if it's bad? It was like, I'm going to create something. Oh, making zines, that's cool. I'm going to do that. I'm going to start going to this zine club downtown because it makes me feel really cool. I'm going to do this thing because I like it. And whenever I can access that part of myself still, that is when I'm the most powerful, because it is that enthusiasm. And fuck, Amber, I love that question. What is the wisdom of the maiden aspect? That's the name of the show. That's the name of this episode.
You know, part of why I am tapping into this so much is I have a 17-year-old witch daughter.
That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, just right in the next room is a baby witch just hanging out in there with her tarot cards, you know. And recently she was like, you know, Mom, I'm feeling very spiritual. I'm really feeling like myself. I'm really noticing my angel numbers.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And you know, when my daughter started coming into this, my inner adolescent, which I was not tracking, I was very sidetracked. I was knocked off my rails. When I noticed this come up, I had a lot of conflict with my daughter as she started to come into her full maiden aspect, because my inner adolescent wasn't getting any airtime, any space. I was so concentrated on 4-year-old Amber. and we butted heads for the first time in our relationship. Me and Livy have always had such a great relationship, and she came into that aspect and I felt so much animosity because I didn't get that. So we worked through it together, and I started to really look at her wisdom, look at her sense of expansiveness, that sense of possibility like you're talking about. You know, the world hasn't gotten its hands on her and told her she's not enough yet. She still feels like she can do anything. And I felt jealous of that. And when I worked past it, our relationship knit back together so beautifully. And then I started to absorb some of that. You know, when I could like move away from the animosity of not being a fucking maiden anymore, I was like, why can't I be a maiden? I absolutely am, right? And that's another gift of witchcraft, is that we don't have to be one thing. We're all about the multiplicity. We're all about the collective. We can all be together in community.
I love that. And, you know, having seen you and Olivia for the past 10 years with your relationship, watching her grow from a little thing into a like 5'10" beautiful golden model of a woman, who's a witch, and watching you become a mother in like, God, I feel like every year you're a new mom.
I mean, every year I have a new child. I've never raised a 17-year-old before.
Yeah. And, yes. You know, there's this Glennon Doyle quote that I've been working with a lot the past couple weeks. And it is, the braver I am, the luckier I get. Mm-hmm. And I love that. It also
feels great.
Oh, it feels so related to embracing magic. And I kind of feel like we are getting to the natural end of the public episode, and then we're going to be inviting you, Kate, to be part of our after show for Patreon. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you both, I wanted us to talk about, which teen witch character do you identify with most? It's a tough question, I know.
Like Sun and Sabrina, Nancy Rising.
Which Sabrina though? The 90s or the current?
The 90s.
Aww. I would definitely say the 90s Sabrina for sure.
Yeah.
I feel like in general, I'm Willow. I don't think that I could become Dark Willow. but who knows? I mean, if I was part of a really sad lesbian arc where my lover died, I mean, spoilers if you haven't seen the show.
Yeah.
It's over, 20 years old, but you know, I might change, but I love Willow, and she's such a nerd, and she's so smart, and also just, she just explores her magic and shyly lends it to her little group. I love it.
Oh, wait, Thomasin from The Witch. So.
Yeah, that's too scary for me.
I fucking love it. So Sun and Sabrina, Thomasin Rising, Moon and Nancy. That's I'm going to go for that one.
Oh my God, yes, your moon is so Nancy.
I'll fucking kill you. Yeah.
I think my moon is Matilda.
Oh
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys read We Ride Upon Sticks?
No.
So it's by this author Quan Berry, but it's set in the 1980s, and it's about a women's lacrosse team who makes a deal with the devil by writing their names in an Emilio Estevez notebook.
Oh my God.
And then they start winning. It is amazing. Awesome. It is amazing. And it's set in Salem, Massachusetts. So it has all of these kind of like interwovens, but yeah, that's one of my favorite witch books. Oh, I also read Practical Magic for the first time this year, which I had never read it before. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds fun.
It's just like, it is a beautifully written book. And it's full of like real witchcraft.
Ooh. solid recommendation, noting that down for the book club. We have a book coven on Patreon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We're currently in kind of half-assing our way through like week, I think, 9 of The Artist's Way. Amber and I are, we're going to be making stuff about it on Tuesday, but we wanted to invite you to talk with us in our after show about how to mother and mentor the teen witches in your life.
Oh, very interesting. Well, I mean, I don't have any teen witches of my own, but I think it's so important to just give people space. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that, you know, I have always noticed is adults have a tendency when they're talking to young people, it's like their go-to is like, let's give this person some advice and like, let's tell them what to do. And I think it's so much more beneficial to just ask people questions, you know, and it's like how, you know, ask them like what they're into and why they're into it. And, you know, like just listen, because it's like these kids are so bombarded with ideas from, you know, every which way, and everyone's like talking at them. And it's like, you know, social media is shouting into the void. Mm-hmm. Like you're like trying to, you know, say something to hundreds of millions of people that are all talking at once. And yeah, I think just listening is like the best thing that you can do.
Well, what a perfect lead-in to show Amber's interview with her daughter, Olivia, and mm-hmm. Olivia's best friend, Molly.
Yes. Enjoy the interview. It's very precious. That will be in just a couple minutes. Let's give our just wrap-up comments. And then, yeah, please stay tuned for that. And if you're part of our Patreon, please stay tuned for more discussion on teenage witches and how to support their growth and health. So let's see, what are our plugs? Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We've gotten a good number of new reviews and we appreciate them so very much.
Yes. And if you are not yet part of our Patreon coven, we do have bonus episodes every single week. So that means that this week you will have up to 32, more than 32 actually, bonus episodes. So if you just can't get enough of our soothing tones and relaxing voices, then head on over to patreon.com/pocketcoven. I forget our link every single week and I made it and I manage it, but it's also in the show notes. It's also on our Instagram where you can find us and keep up with whatever we're doing. But for real, rate and review. It helps us so much. Kate, where can people find you? Where can they get your books? Where can they get to know you?
My books are available everywhere, though I always love to steer people to their local indie bookstores. And to say that I absolutely love it when people check my books out from the library. Libraries are a huge resource, and you can request that your library stock books. And that is huge, because it's like, if you request that a library like stocks a book, then you're putting that author's name and their work on the library's radar. And like, librarians are huge in getting books into the hands of especially teenagers and just people in general. So I'm always like, I'd love for people to buy my book, but the most important thing is read it. And you know, I'm a huge fan of the library. And then me, I am on Instagram at Hey Kate Williams.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much, Kate. And again, stay tuned for more Kate if you're a Patreon member. And we'll see you next week. I have here Olivia and Molly. Olivia is my daughter. Molly is her best friend. And since we are having an episode on teen witches, I felt like I would be remiss if I did not interview the teen witches in my basement. So I'm going to ask you both a question, okay? And you'll answer one at a time. The question is, do you consider yourself a witch? Molly, would you like to start us off?
I would say I would still consider myself a baby witch, but, you know, I'm really into it. I really want to get more into it, but you know, I've been just really busy with school and work, but I really just wish I had more time for it, but yeah.
That is something that we often discuss on the podcast is trying to make time for witchcraft. So we'll speak to that in a moment. Olivia, what do you have to say about this?
I would consider myself a very witchy person growing up with a witch mom. She liked to incorporate incense and rocks to me at a very young age. I usually just played with rocks when I was really, really tiny. I would try to eat rocks, so.
And eat sand.
Oh, asshole. Also, tiny rocks, sand. I would also try to eat sand. That was a fun part of, fun chapter of my life. Anyways, I would consider myself a very witchy person. I try to be very spiritual all of the time. And,
I can attest Olivia eats rocks and sand all the time. This bitch is constantly just choking down sand. Yes, Olivia's always been very interested in the natural world. We would give her a lot of toys and she didn't really care. She would sit in a rock garden and just play with rocks for the most part. So intergenerational witch she is for sure. Let's see. My next question is, why do you think that witchcraft is valuable? Molly, what do you think?
It's a huge part of our protection and how we live our life and how we can protect ourselves and like know how to love others. And I think it's just a huge part. It's everything. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's hard to explain. It's everywhere. You see it everywhere. It's just a crazy experience, especially when you like start to see it, you see it all the time, especially with angel numbers. When you see that shit, oh my God, you never stop. You never stop.
That is true. Angel numbers have definitely been a thing. Would one of you care to explain what angel numbers are?
Angel numbers are basically your angels or your spirit guides trying to tell you something. So if you see a number like 111 or 222 or like etc. up till 555, it usually, each one has a different meaning about like what they're trying to tell you and how they're trying to guide you into your life.
Ooh, nice. I like the way you sum that up. I've had 111 following me. Liv, which numbers have been following you?
Mostly 333, which is kind of crazy because I was, 3 is my golden number because I was born on the 3rd, which is kind of crazy, but I've honestly just been seeing all of them, throughout the day.
Usually I see 444, but I've also noticed I look at the time at 623 a lot, but that's my birth date, it was June 23rd. I'm not sure if it's connected at all, so we'll see. I could do some research, but... yeah.
What do you think your guides are trying to tell you?
It's kind of weird because I often see these numbers at super significant times, like right before I'm about to do something super big or right after I did something super like significant to me. And I think they're just trying to tell me that I'm going in the right direction in life.
I would say about the same thing. Like I see them at really odd or specific times. And it's usually at times where I'm thinking about moving on or just traveling or any types of transition in life. They usually pop up a lot.
And so, Olivia, we didn't hear from you. Why do you think witchcraft is valuable?
I think witchcraft is valuable because it's not at all the same, but it's kind of like a religion. Like, it's something that, kind of like Molly was saying, like, it protects people. Like, it's, like, something to believe in, and it's, like, all around. And once you start to see it, you never stop to see it, and you just keep seeing signs everywhere, kind of like angel numbers. And, like, once you start to see that, it becomes more, how do I put this? It becomes a bigger part of your life. Like, you become it, kind of, yeah.
For sure.
Totally, yeah. I definitely resonate with that. It just becomes part of who you are. In terms of practice, what do you do? You know, like I often do a lot of tarot, for instance. What does your witchcraft practice look like? Even if you just do it sometimes, you know, what does it look like?
I'll go first. Usually I do my tarot cards whenever I feel I need some guidance at all for anything, if it's school, relationships with either friends, family, anyone. I use my tarot cards for a lot of things, actually. But I also use my crystals a lot. I put mine on my third eye a lot, and I just, like, sit there with my crystals on my forehead. But, yeah, I have lots of crystals. Use a lot of my crystals for my third eye, and I think it's a very fun and healthy way to meditate.
I also do a lot of tarot cards. Whenever I need guidance, kind of like Molly said. Or I usually kind of just try to sit with nature and kind of be one with nature and listen to what it's trying to say, because it has a lot to say if you are quiet and just listen to it.
Like, a lot of times, me and Olivia, if we're just having a bad day or if we're just tired, and even if we have no energy, we still go out, like, go on adventures, go on trails, and we just sit by the waterfalls and we just talk, and it's always just a really good time. We look at the water and, like, go on secret trails and just see whatever takes us there.
Aw, nice job. I love the answers. You guys are so insightful. So, final question, Liv, what is it like to have a mom who's a witch?
It's definitely terrifying. there are a lot of spirits roaming around the basement. I have to sleep down here by myself. It's kind of terrifying.
I can also feel them when I am here.
Yeah, we can feel their energy. Not only their energy, just like...
their presence.
Their presence, for sure, is definitely there. Should I tell the story about the show? Yeah, okay. I should.
Oh my gosh.
So... here is a fun little story. There was this little shell, and what is it called? The incense that you use?
She's referring to a protection blend incense that I use.
Yeah, like the little, like the ash stuff that you like build up. Mm-hmm. Well, she had put that into a shell, and she was burning it. And she was moving stuff around in her office, and the shell was somewhere like in our little living room space down here, nowhere near my room. Like, nowhere near it. And I had been having, like, a lot of trouble, like, I had been, like, kind of very scared, and I knew there was something near my door at night when I turned off my lights. Like, I could just feel it. Like, I knew something was there. Sometimes it was, like, a tall person. Sometimes a really small child. It was just, like, I knew something was there, and it was very scary. And so I got home one day, and the shell was right smack dab, like in the doorway where you go to open the door. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. My mom put that there probably to, like, protect my doorway. And my mother gets done with her therapy sessions. And I was like, Mom, did you put the shell there? And she was like, no, I thought you put that there. So we got it. Thank you, spirits. But to sum that up, it's very terrifying, but it's also very nice because I know that I'm almost always protected in my own home.
It's no joke working with Hecate. If anyone works with Hecate, it's not uncommon, I think, when we're doing work like this, for just spooky little things to happen. And Hecate is a guardian of doorways and is embodied in all doorways. So Olivia has been having a lot of doorway chaos, but it's all, like, very sweet. It's like little presents or just little, you know, visions that Olivia will have about it. So... yeah, it's definitely a vibe, and I think that both Olivia and Molly are just absolutely wonderful little witches, and I am so proud of them. It's really wonderful watching them find something that's meaningful for them, you know? So any other final words or guidance for the listeners on being a teen witch?
Keep doing you. Like, do whatever you feel is right to you, honestly. It will make you feel a lot better about a lot of things.
Yeah, do whatever works for you. Like, not just because someone else does something else doesn't mean that'll work for you. And yeah, just like do whatever you need to do for yourself.
Do what thou wilt.
Yes. Protect yourself.
Bye.